4 at a vertex. And this 2, 1 is this identification vector here. We've just taken the tessellation of the plane by squares and identified vertices separated by this and the rotation by 90 degrees. So this blue shaded area then is the actual polytope itself. That's that becomes a torus map with 5 squares. And then here is the mirror image here. And we'll denote the mirror image by just putting a bar over the polytope. Okay, so that tells you what chiral polytopes are. Of course, the dual of a polytope we get just by reversing the partial order. And if a polytope is isomorphic to its dual, then we say that it's self-dual. And for chiral polytopes, there are sort of 2 flavors of duality, of self-duality. So either the dual can be equal to the mirror image of the polytope, in which case we say it's improperly self-dual, or the dual can be equal to the polytope itself, in which case we say it's properly self-dual. So for instance, this polytope here is, both of these, of course, are self-dual. They're improperly self-dual. So dualize this guy, and you get this guy here. Okay, like regular polytopes, chiral polytopes have very nice automorphism groups. So we'll start with a chiral polytope. We fix some base flag. So here that's going to be that solid one on the left. And the automorphism group then is generated by these n-1 elements, sigma, I. These are what we'll call abstract rotations. And sigma I then sends our base flag phi to phi I minus 1. I have to explain that. Since we have this diamond property of polytopes, for any flag, there's a unique flag that differs from it in its I face. So for example, for our base flag here, that's the flag that differs only in the 1 face. And the flag that differs from that only in the 0 face is that flag. And so that's where sigma 1 would send our base flag, to this middle flag here. And if we apply it again, it gets sent to this outer flag, and applying it a third time returns it back to where it started. So these are the generators, then, of this automorphism group. And in fact, we see here, since these generators will always sort of move you by 2 adjacencies, these are really are just ones that send you an even number of flags away. This is why every other flag is in a different orbit. And we get a lot of nice properties here, really from the properties of string C groups. They're just a little bit modified. So for instance, if I take the product sigma I through sigma j, where I is strictly less than j, this automorphism has order 2. That comes from the commuting of non-adjacent involutions from regular polytopes. And then we get this intersection condition, which again is very similar to what we have for regular polytopes. It's a little more technical, but the idea is exactly the same. It's really just an algebraic expression of the connectivity conditions on polytopes. This really only addresses the polytopality of what we have, not the chirality. So for instance, it's also true, although I won't get into it so much, that this group lacks a certain outer automorphism. But okay, so we have all these kind of nice properties. And again, what we really want to do is understand chiral polytopes completely algebraically. So we want a way to build chiral polytopes from groups. And we do this in much the same way as we do for string C groups and regular polytopes. We have the standard coset geometry, where I take these n distinguished subgroups of a given group, and we take the faces of rank k to be their cosets, the cosets of gamma k, and we say that 2 cosets are incident if they intersect. So in principle, I can do this for any group at all, although there's, of course, a lot to check here. It's not even necessarily a partially ordered set. But as long as our group is nice enough, then when I do this construction, we get a chiral polytope, and its automorphism group is the group we started with. So, of course, by nice enough, I mean certainly at least these 2 properties. But also, again, for chirality, we need a little more. Okay, so this gives us a nice way to work with chiral polytopes algebraically. So now we get to this mixing construction of polytopes, which really comes just from a mixing construction of groups. So on the group level, it's a very elementary construction. I take two groups on n minus 1 generators, and we look at these sort of diagonal elements, alpha I, and I just look at the subgroup of the direct product that they generate. And in terms of quotients, this is particularly nice. If my two groups are quotients of the same group by different normal subgroups, then this mix then just really takes the intersection of those normal subgroups. And of course, you know, typically in our applications, we take these groups G to be these groups of this universal N polytope with Schlafly symbol sort of infinity, infinity, etc. Okay, so that's our group theoretic construction. And from here, we get to the mix of two polytopes. So this has been around for regular polytopes for a little while and chiral polytopes for a little less while. And it's essentially, it's really the same construction as the join of two maps or two hypermaps. So if I have two chiral polytopes, then the way we mix them is I just take their automorphism groups, mix them, and build a poset out of it. So here, of course, our group is not just some random n minus 1 generator group, and so we expect a fairly nice structure when I build something out of it. But nevertheless, we might get something regular instead of chiral, and we might not get something that's a polytope. It's usually close. It typically has, well, okay, it always has a sort of global connectivity, but it lacks local connectivity sometimes. Okay, so this is a very nice general construction. This gives us the minimal polytope that covers P and Q in this kind of natural way. And there's a very nice interaction with duality. If I take two polytopes and mix them and then take a dual, I get the same thing as if I take their duals first and then mix them. And so as a result, mixing a polytope with its dual gives you something that's properly self-dual. In fact, the minimal properly self-dual cover of the polytope you started with. Okay, so that sounds almost like we're done, except that, again, it's not necessarily chiral and it's not necessarily a polytope. And since the talk is called Constructing Self-Dual Chiral Polytopes, I still have at least two things I need to talk to you about. So we'll deal with chirality first. So we have the following nice result. If I take a polytope and mix it with its dual, look at that group. Take the polytope mixed with its mirror image. And then if there's no sort of natural epimorphism here sending just generator to generator, then we get a chiral polytope when I look at this mix. So, in fact, this group on the right-hand side, this is the minimal regular cover of that chiral polytope. So, in order for this to be regular, it has to cover that. So, it's a very nice result, and in particular, we can say lots of things about this without even really dipping into group theory at all, except for very basic things. So, here's a broad class of examples. So, we'll start with a finite chiral polyhedron of type 3-7. With a simple automorphism group. Of course, these are these Hurwitz maps that have been very well understood, and there are lots of such. So in this case, what happens is the mix of P with its dual, that group mixes like the direct product. So in other words, these diagonal elements actually give you the whole direct product. This really is because the group is simple. But the fact that 3 and 7 are relatively prime is certainly helpful. That's right. Yeah, so in both of these cases, mixing P with its dual or with its mirror image, they both mix like the direct product because we started with a simple group. So, yeah, that's true. They need to be different in order for this to be true for the simple groups. The second one is true anyway, whether or not these guys are different. So, okay, that means then that both of these two groups are the same size. so that if there is a map, an epimorphism from the first one to the second one, then it has to have a trivial kernel. But on the other hand, this first group, the first generator, has order 21, the product of 3 and 7, and the second group, the first generator, has order 3. So, that would be a non-trivial kernel. So there is no such epimorphism from here to here, so we do in fact get a chiral polyhedron when I mix P with its dual. Well, strictly speaking, all I've shown is that we get something chiral, not a polyhedron, although that is true. Okay, and the same idea generalizes nicely to higher ranks. If we take a finite chiral polytope of a given type with a simple automorphism group, such that, so to speak, the type is not self-dual, then I get something chiral. So the type of the dual of P is just the reverse of the original type. So I just need that for some pair here, I don't have the same number. And then this exact same argument works to show that we get a chiral something. Chiral poset, I suppose. Really, it's a chiral pre-polytope. Okay, so that gives us some results on chirality. By no means all of them, but in practice, it seems that we almost always get something chiral when we do this. Things tend to be, in a sense, more chiral than they are far away from being self-dual. And so chirality ends up being not a big problem. The thornier problem is when we get a polytope. So first of all, the mix of chiral polyhedra is a polyhedron. So in other words, there's no problem here. And again, this really comes, when we look at this on the level of just chiral maps, that's sort of nothing new. And combining this with what we had before and generalizing a little bit, if I have a finite chiral polyhedron of type PQ, then if the mix of P with its dual is small enough, then we get a properly self-dual chiral polyhedron. This factor here, PQ over G squared, again, just comes from looking, that's the minimal size of the kernel we would have going from here to here via this natural map. So it's a very elementary argument that gives us this result here. Okay, and again, there is a way of lifting this to higher ranks, although here it's somewhat more specialized. If I take a chiral polytope of a given type, where each pi is relatively prime to pn minus I, then this mix is a polytope. And this you can just sort of prove directly. You can prove the intersection property for this directly. And so then combining with our previous result on chirality, in this case, if we, for instance, also have a simple automorphism group, then we get a self-dual chiral polytope. So this is kind of a nice general result that requires not much information about your polytope. So there are two minor problems. Problem one is this only works when n is odd. Chiral. That's right. I was a little lazy. Often, if I don't say, I mean chiral, P is understood to be chiral. Okay, so defect number one. This condition here that each pi is relatively prime to pn minus I, well, of course, that only works when n is odd. So we say, fine, I'll only work with odd n. Now, when n is 3, we already have a result, and it's essentially the same as this. So great, so when n equals 5, then I start getting results. The only problem is we don't really know many chiral 5 polytopes yet. So I'm waiting for all those bright people in the room who are working on chiral polytopes to hurry up and give me some more examples. We do have some examples, but then they don't satisfy this other condition here. So meanwhile, I'm ready and waiting. But that's sort of what we have for odd ranks. In even ranks, it's somewhat harder. Not impossible, but in practice, it seems that for many of the chiral 4 polytopes we know, that in fact, that we get something that is not a polytope when I mix P with its dual. So in general, I haven't been able to prove this, just looked at a lot, although here's one result of that type we can actually prove. So if I have a four polytope of some given type where this middle entry is odd and the outer entries are relatively prime, then we can prove that this group does not have the intersection property we want. So this intersection, one of these intersections, this sort of medial intersection, comes out to be too big, basically. And so we definitely don't get a polytope in that case. Okay, so there's still a lot of work to do with polytopality in odd rank, in even ranks. But anyway, this construction generalizes in a few very nice ways. Well, actually in a lot of very nice ways, but here are a few of them. First of all, I can mix a polytope with the dual of its mirror, or the mirror of its dual. Actually, those turn out to be the same. And that gets me something that is improperly self-dual instead of properly self-dual. And all the previous results, they all carry over exactly the same way. Similarly, here's where I can maybe justify my leaving out chiral in some places anyway. This also works for mixing a regular polytope with its dual. So then we also get something self-dual. So there, we always get something regular. So the only question is, do we actually get a polytope and not a pre-polytope? So in that sense, it's an easier question, which is to say a less interesting question, but still kind of interesting. Similarly, if we take, say, a regular polyhedron, we can mix it with its Petri dual to get something that's self-Petri dual. And in fact, we can, say, take a regular polyhedron and mix it with its five images under this group generated by the duality and Petri duality to get the minimal, the minimal polyhedron with trinity symmetry that covers what we started with. So this mixing construction really, in a very nice, natural way, gives you this way of building these highly symmetric, well, polyhedra or polygons, or polytopes. I suppose polygons, but those tend to be fairly symmetric already. So yeah, we can do a lot with this mixing construction. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Questions?
Right, it might be regular. Well, it's not possible to get anything other than regular or chiral. But the result I have here, this is not an if and only if. It seems that almost always we get something chiral when I do this. At least in the, again, here I'm really looking at finite polytopes. I suspect most of this will work for infinite polytopes by, basically this result is true even for infinite polytopes, but of course there I can't use my sort of cute sort of easy arguments with divisibility. So there are a lot of other slightly more specialized results than this that will give us something chiral, but this is one of the sort of maybe one of the nicest, most general ones. That's right. That's right. Yeah, and I have examined this a lot. What happens for most of our examples is it seems that I call that the co-mix of two polytopes.
You're using this idea.
Oh yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. That's right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there are a lot of reasons to do this. Maybe the foremost is that these guys tend to get fairly large, and to understand their structure is kind of difficult. But right, there's a very natural way that you can just look at the look at the products of these normal subgroups.
For computational reasons, it is fine to have permutational expression of this object using your whatever product.
Right, that's right.
This is the way how to express it in a permutation way.
That's right.
How important is it that your groups are simple? Can you extend them?
That's right, not terribly important. So here, what happened basically was that gave me just a really easy way to look at sizes of things. So here, for instance, I don't even use simplicity. Yeah, well, here's an example. Here, there are no simplicity assumptions at all, right? So the simplicity assumption I only used because that told me that these mixes both were the direct product. So it gave me just a slightly easier version of this, but it's not at all required. Mm-hmm. That I discovered today. Yeah. Oh, great. I'll be there. The group of the P mixed with its dual?
Yes, so it depends on some information of the input polytope. So you have something.
It tends to be fairly close in size to the direct product. By tends to be, here's what I mean. So by looking at this co-mix, this greatest lower bound of these two guys, since the type of the dual is the reverse here, what typically happens is that the type of the co-mix, then I take the greatest common divisors of these guys. And so what happens is once one of these guys becomes one, it kind of nukes a whole bunch of things all around it. And so these co-mixes tend to be very small, and the mixes therefore tend to be very small index then in the direct product. That's right. Yeah. I mean, in fact, I've played around a little bit. On the level of, say, chiral maps, then you can look at, what's the genus, say, of the underlying surface. It tends to be huge because the number of edges scales like the size of the automorphism group, but the size of the faces and the vertex figures scales very little. So in some sense, geometrically, this is maybe not so satisfying. But I don't really care. Combinatorially, it's very satisfying.
Thank you.